from the Rams studio connected by AT&T. Welcome to Between the Horns. It is December 13th, about 11 a.m. Pacific time here in Los Angeles. And the Rams are now 9-4. They fell to the Philadelphia Eagles 43-35, a final score that sort of annoys me because it really should have been 37-35, DeMarco. But the Rams are still in first place in the NFC West by a game, and this is one of the biggest games that the Rams have had over the last decade, really, now going up to Seattle. So, but before we really get going, I do want to take a second to mention, because we were not on the air last week due to the wildfires, that we sincerely hope that you and yours are all safe, that your family is all right, because I know that this is some serious stuff going on here in Southern California.
It's touching a lot of lives right now. So, yeah, a lot of things have been affected. I mean, football is just a game.
It is.
That's real.
That is real, and that's obviously more important than what we're doing right now. But this game that happened on Sunday, you know, between the Rams and Eagles, I think Jared Goff put it really well post-game when he said, these two teams feel very even, and if we played 10 times, you might come out 50-50.
Yeah. A lot of respect on both sides post-game. I mean, I bet there was a lot pre-game, but evenly matched. I mean, Philadelphia was as good as advertised, and the Rams, I definitely showed some heart coming back and getting back in that football game and taking the lead, having the chance to win. And, you know, look, championship heart. We talked about it. Best team on game day. He who makes the fewest mistakes will win that game. So, you know, Chris Long getting the ball out in that key situation, just stripping Jared Goff. I mean, you have to tip your cap there. If that doesn't happen, I'm convinced the Rams probably go down the field and score. There was a lot of heart, a lot of intestinal fortitude, so to speak, being shown in that game. Andrew Whitworth coming back from injury. Rob Havenstein going down, getting back up. Alec Ogletree gave you everything he had in that football game. I mean, there was a lot to be proud of. So one team has to win, one team had to lose. Going up the tunnel after the game, you couldn't tell who won or lost. Right. It was just that punishing on both sides.
Well, it was a physical game, and I think it was because it was so even. And because Seattle lost, it's almost like you don't feel as bad as you would have, you know, losing that game because it was so close, and because you know that if a couple different things happen, like people say this all the time, like a game is often decided by a couple plays and it can turn and da-da-da-da-da.
And it is,
I think this is one game in particular where you can point to a couple of spots and you can say, yeah, this game really could have gone either way.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think we said on the pregame show, last possession will probably win this football game, and it came down to that. Now, you had 1 second on the clock to get it done. I mean, after that after that fair catch. But, you know, it is what it is. But, you know, it was a tough matchup. I thought the Rams did a great job defensively with their depth. I mean, they lost a lot of people
along
the way. I mean, you had to play backup corners. You had to play a backup middle linebacker. You had to constantly rotate people through your front seven. And for the most part, I mean, once you saw all their plays, you got most of them sewed up. And you made it a tough football game for them. You knocked Carson Wentz out of the game. No one wants to see a guy done for the year, but I mean, this was a guy that was torturing you, and you finally had got a shot on him to get him out of the football game. So that's the way it goes. I mean, they're going to be coming after Jared Goff in Seattle. They want to see if they can get to the backup. This is December football. This is not for the faint at heart.
No, it's not. And that was really the unfortunate thing. You have to seeing Carson Wentz go down the way he went down, and now he is obviously out for the season with that ACL injury. And when he goes down, though, and the Eagles start the fourth quarter with Nick Foles at quarterback, I mean, I'm sitting there in the press box, and I'm feeling like, okay, the Rams have a good shot at winning this game, especially because your backup quarterback is in.
And his first couple of passes, I mean, they were a little off target, and you have to expect that. I mean, there's an offense. There's 10 guys out there that are in the flow and one guy that's just trying to get warmed up. So some of his passes were a little bit off. You might have had some chances for takeaways there on defense. It didn't happen. And then once he got into a rhythm, it was a big third down. He hit it, and that pretty much sealed it for you. But, yeah, I mean, it's like you said, it was a whale of a football game. But this is what good teams do. This is what good teams can do. You can take an L to another good football team and say, oh, by the way, the silver lining is Seattle lost. We still have a chance for first place. We still have a chance to accomplish everything we want to accomplish next week. only good teams can say that. So, yeah, it's a tough loss, but you can move on from it a little bit faster when you have 9 wins mid-December.
I think that's a really good point because the Rams have set themselves up so well to play football beyond the end of the regular season. It's not like losing that game to the Eagles was the end of the world.
Right. For some teams, it would have been.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You could have, your playoff dreams could have ended right there in the Coliseum. No, you have another shot because of what you've done early.
Right. And and that's very important. But there were a number of kind of critical errors, and you sort of alluded to one of them. Definitely the Goff strip sack.
Oof.
You know, that's critical. And to me, that was kind of the biggest difference, especially because of the game situation. But then you also had penalties that were killers, particularly earlier in the game. You get a couple of defensive pass interference fouls that allow Philadelphia to move down the field and get into scoring position. And those are the kinds of things that good teams will always take advantage of.
Absolutely. There was one play I can remember, and I can't get it out of my head, where Carson Wentz was on fire. He was being efficient, and he let one go that was, I call, a mistake pitch, like in baseball.
Mistake pitch.
Where it's off target, it's offline, and the defense has a chance to make a play on it. And I believe it was Roby Coleman that has a shot at picking off the pass.
On a diving play.
Now, I mean, it's an impossible ask to make that play, but those are the plays you need to come up with against teams like that.
Right.
You've got to get those takeaways. But, you know, those PIs and those defensive penalties, they're untimely. They give the offense a chance to regroup. You're tired. There's nothing worse than when you think, as a defender, on third down, when you're getting after it as tough, as hard as you can, and you think you're off the field, and then all of a sudden you're back on and it's first down again.
Right.
It's hard to regroup physically. You're out of breath. And mentally, you're frustrated. But you have to play the next play. And offensive coordinators and good offensive teams will take advantage of that. And I think we saw that versus Philadelphia.
For sure. I mean, Philadelphia had 29 first downs, 6 of which came via Los Angeles Rams penalty.
Yeah, that really. I mean, like, take those 6 away and you probably don't have to play 85 snaps.
Right.
Yeah, that one penalty probably cost you, let's say, another 5 plays.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you played 2 games in one game because of your penalties.
Yeah, exactly. And when you're on the field for that long, and Philadelphia held the ball for nearly 40 minutes to the Rams about 20, that's definitely going to affect you. I mean, we've seen that kind of thing time and time again with the Rams in the past, where defense is on the field for so long, it's almost inevitable that the unit is going to lose a little bit as the game gets to its final stages.
And that's why I was so impressed. That's why I was encouraged by what I saw. Not about the outcome, the result of the game. Of course, you want the W, but when you watch a defense that's been on the field that long, defending that sort of offense, and when it's crunch time, the last 5 minutes looks like the first 5 minutes athletically, those are guys going to get it.
Right.
Those are guys that are prideful, that want this victory. So there's a lot to be proud of. There's a lot to be happy with. Even with the guys, some of the guys that gave up big plays, you're right there.
Yeah.
You know, John Johnson comes to mind. I mean, he's beaten for a touchdown, but he's right there in coverage. The only thing you can tell him as a coach is, look, move on. They're going to make plays too. Mm-hmm. He gets paid just like you do, but you're in the right position. They didn't fool you at all. Just get ready to go on the next play. So it's easy to get down in yourself in those situations, but remember, man, you're fighting for a playoff spot. This is where you want to be.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's one of the things that makes Philadelphia so good, because they have basically elite level talent, I think, at almost every position. And that's including tight end, even when Zach Ertz is not in there. You saw Brent Celek, you saw Trey Burton do some really impressive things.
I mean,
that's what you're talking about with John Johnson.
Yeah.
He's in position, and against maybe some lesser teams, you make that play. But Philadelphia is where it is in the NFC right now for a reason.
Or a lesser quarterback that's off target.
Right.
You have a chance to make a play. Look, Carson Wentz, I think, without the injury, was probably, I mean, the guy you have to face in Seattle is going to say something about the MVP race. But from what I saw and what I saw going into that game last Sunday, it would be Carson Wentz's MVP.
Yeah.
He has been playing lights out ball.
He has been. Yeah. And that was why I thought it was interesting that the Rams started the game with a takeaway. Mm-hmm. You know, you get that pick from Kayvon Webster, and Nickell Roby-Coleman was playing really good coverage on that third down and 5. And it's a shame that Kayvon Webster is now out for for the rest of the season with that ruptured Achilles, because I really thought that he played well throughout the year.
I thought he was a perfect complement to Tremaine Johnson and perfect for what Wade Phillips wants to do defensively.
Right.
So without him, you're going to lose some oomph against the run and some length against the pass. But there are guys on this roster that can fill in, and they've done it before.
Like who?
Well, Troy Hill's going to have to come up and play big. That's number one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Nickell Robey-Coleman, like you said, has been playing great football, but this is what I mean. You're going to lose some oomph on the run. Mm-hmm. If he's got to be out there outside the numbers covering receivers, I feel comfortable with that. But at some point, they're going to run the ball at him, which is going to be a game plan. So you're going to lose some oomph there. So Kayvon Webster, is we don't talk much about his tackling and his run-stopping ability.
I feel like you and I
we do.
Might, but yes, I don't think it's talked about enough because it is something that has been a difference maker, I think, throughout the year.
Absolutely, and it seemed like it was a competition between Tremaine Johnson and him and Kayvon Webster. When those receivers do trail off and go block safeties or linebackers and they expect those corners or want those corners to come up and make plays, well, those guys are as big as linebackers.
Right.
Those guys are as big as safeties, and running backs have a tough time getting around them or getting through them, so now that's going to be a little bit different when you don't have that outside the numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a pretty big difference maker. And we'll get to some more of the injury updates a little bit later in the show. But I do want to go back to another thing that we sort of brought up, to the Tremaine Johnson unsportsmanlike conduct penalty.
Yeah.
I don't know where you were on the field, but you
obviously right on the sideline.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
But you have a better view of these things than I do, and a better vantage point of these things than I do, since I'm in the press box and you're down on the sideline doing your job. So what did you see on that?
Well, okay, this is funny. It's a long way to get to where we're going, but I went back and I watched the Seattle-Jacksonville game, right?
Uh-huh.
All you heard about was the melee, the guy trying to go into the stand,
yes.
Michael Bennett. That's all you saw. But if you go back and watch that game from start to finish, it was chippy from start to finish.
Right,
there was a lot of carryover that led up to that moment. So when you have situations like that, and you have situations like the Cincinnati Steelers game, where it was a hit fest and a flag fest, guys were getting ejected and suspended, you know that it's going to be an overreaction by the referees the next week. So it's getting chippy versus Philadelphia, especially when the Rams were on the field versus their offense, because they were out there a long time. There's going to be a lot of pushing and shoving. There was a lot of talking going on. There was a lot of warnings by the referees.
Mm-hmm.
Play the game, play the game, play the game. So I think Tremaine said something or did something after the second warning.
Mm-hmm.
Now, maybe it didn't warrant a flag, but they said, hey, calm it down, talk to your own players, go back to your sidelines, go back to your huddles. When they give you a direct order like that, you must follow. Because if you don't, then that's when you start losing control as a referee and the game turns into a melee. So I think Tremaine Johnson just got caught up in that overreaction by the officials.
Yeah.
We need to maintain control no matter what's going on in the game.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's what happened there.
And that's pretty unfortunate. I mean, because it was a situation where you could have gotten off the field, and then that gives them a first down and it allows them to go score a touchdown.
Yeah, I mean, look, what they usually do in that situation is one guy will go tell the head coaches, you need to go talk to this guy, that guy, and that guy.
Right.
Calm him down.
Mm-hmm.
Give the coach a chance to calm his player down before you start throwing flags and giving away first downs. Because now you're affecting the game.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. It makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, so I think there could have been better ways to handle what Tremaine did than dropping a flag at that moment. Because you changed the game, in my opinion.
I think so, too.
Absolutely. You definitely changed that drive.
No question. Yes. You might have changed the complexion of Carson Wentz's season, as a matter of fact.
Probably. Yeah. That probably.
Because you wanted to be the referee show.
Well, I don't know if it's the referee show, but like you said, it's an overreaction. I mean, the last thing you want now in the National Football League is melees on Sunday.
Of course.
Yeah.
Right.
What happened in Jacksonville? You can't have that. So there's going to be an overreaction as of right now. So you have to know that as an offense and a defensive player. What is the mood? What is the temper of the NFL at this moment? And just know, if I have something to say to you as a player and I get warned by the official, listen to that official.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's got the ultimate deal. He's got the flag.
Well, I think especially considering the way Seattle-Jacksonville ended, that's going to be something that you have to emphasize if you are the LA Rams coaching staff this week, right?
Yeah.
I mean, just given the fact that Seattle was involved in what they were involved in, Like, you're going to have officials, I believe, that are going to want to really maintain control of the game early and often.
Oh, yeah, and you can control that yourself. Just police your own guys.
Right.
You know, if you have guys that are getting into it with the other team, pull your guy away.
Yeah.
Don't pull him away and stand in front and shout at the guy he's shouting at. Yes. Pull your guy away, get him back to the huddle.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's something that I think McVay even mentioned, you know, we can't beat ourselves. We have to be able to control things that we can control. And what right. you can't control is your own actions in those kinds of situations.
Absolutely. And just know, I mean, I love guys that are in your face. I love cornerbacks that aren't afraid to get beat. I just love aggressive corners. But you got the victory. You're out on third down.
Right.
Leave it alone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let him go stew on the bench. Mm-hmm. If you've got something to say, wait until the next series. Mm-hmm. You know? Save it for the next series is what that's what I would have said right then and there.
Yeah. Save it for the next series. Mm-hmm. All right. So let's talk a little bit about the offense too, because there were obviously defensive penalties that extended drives, but I think one play that might get a little overlooked that kind of turned things for the Rams in the first half was that holding penalty called on John Sullivan. It was either the second or third offensive possession that the Rams had. And Todd Gurley starts it off with a 20-plus yard run, mm-hmm. but it's called back because of offensive holding. And those are the kinds of plays that can really change the game, because the way Todd Gurley was running, I thought, was outstanding, mm-hmm. first off. Second off, when you have that holding penalty, it now puts you behind the chains.
Yeah.
And instead of, you know, being nearly at midfield, you're even further back into your own territory. And because of that, the offense just stalls. That's part of the reason why you only got 45 plays, is because instead of moving down the field, you're all the way backed up in your own territory.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, those penalties, like that hold. And, you know, watching it from my angle on the field, it looked like he was a million miles away from Todd Gurley. I had a chance to watch it on video. He did get a hand on him. So if Sully doesn't grab him and just kind of slow him down a little bit, he probably makes the play, or mm-hmm. makes the play tougher. So you definitely don't get the long run. I mean, maybe Todd breaks the tackle, stiff arms the guy, who knows?
It's always possible.
He's got that same sort of ability.
He does, especially in that game.
Right, but that guy that's playing defensive line for the Philadelphia Eagles is there for a reason, and he can probably make those plays.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's in that gap to begin with. So it's a tough ask of your center to try to get him out of there and run the ball behind it. So a lot of those plays that are like that get called for holding. Anytime that defender is flailing an arm and he just can't get there because he's being pulled back, well, it's up to the umpire to make that play legal.
Right.
Yeah, because at that point, it probably isn't. So I get it. But I don't know how to say that you can avoid a penalty on that play. But holding calls do short circuit and put you behind the chains a lot in football.
Yeah. And that's one of these things that the offense has just got to avoid going up to Seattle. And it's something that they kind of avoided in the first matchup, but not as well as they could have, particularly in that second half.
Oh, no doubt. Know? Let me say one more thing about that hold.
Yeah.
If they can run that play on you when you're lined up in that gap and they're running towards you, and that center that's a man removed can block you on that play, then you don't deserve to be a starter.
Right.
As a nose tackle.
Yeah.
You just can't. I mean, that's what I'm saying. I mean, you have to play and call it like it is.
Mm-hmm.
If they can run that sort of play and that center can hook you from there, then you need to be on the bench.
Mm.
Yeah, because any nose tackle should be able to at least cut that play off.
I think that, you know, obviously the Eagles are a good enough team that they have done that. They've mm-hmm. shown that they can do that. And they, you know, the Rams to commit foul in order, I guess, to make that play work.
It's a tough ask for any center. I mean, I've seen guys do it. Pro Bowl centers have made those blocks legal. Mm-hmm. Cut those guys off. I mean, that's why they're getting paid big bucks, and that's why they're going to the Pro Bowl. But that was a tough ask against a good run defense.
Yeah. And it's funny, though, to me, just the fact that, you know, the Eagles entered that game as the number one rushing defense, mm-hmm. and Todd Gurley still got 96 yards on only 13 carries. He was running extremely well in that game.
Well, it doesn't, like, part of the being the best run defense in the National Football League also depends on your offense. Now, when you've got Carson Wentz and the boys scoring 35 points a game, you're going to abandon the run on the other side just to keep up. So, you know, you're facing half the rush attempts as everybody else, and you make stops, well, it makes you the number one rush defense.
Exactly, and that was one of the things that I really did think was interesting mm-hmm. going into that game that we didn't really get a chance to talk about last week. The Eagles, part of the reason why the Eagles were the number one rushing defense is because they had the least number of rushing attempts against them.
Oh, yeah.
So that definitely goes into it. And I think, it almost seemed as if Todd Gurley took it as a personal challenge to just make sure that he dominated that front as much as he possibly could. I mean, think about the 30-yard run that he had at the beginning of the game, and then also that 2-yard touchdown that he had. I mean, he looked like a man possessed going into that end zone, splitting those two defenders.
Well, when you see the way that we talked about this pregame, when you see the way the Eagles line up and play defense, they're daring you to run.
Yeah,
what they're saying
with the
is,
wide nine technique.
Yes. I mean, we're saying that our DBs, our safeties in particular, are better tacklers than your runner is, than your running back is a better runner. Well, okay, I'll take that bet with Todd Gurley.
I will too.
I'm even against a guy like Rodney McLeod, who we respect.
Yes.
And Malcolm Jenkins.
Absolutely.
I think I'd take that bet versus Todd Gurley. Even if you get him on the first two carries, let's see how you do on 10 and 12 with the same plays. I bet you he's going to make you miss more times than not, and that's what happened.
Yeah, exactly. But again, Todd Gurley is a guy that I think we keep talking about, and he's somebody that has clearly had a ton of production in this season. And now one of the talking points that has come up with the LA Rams is, okay, is Todd Gurley, I don't want to say being misused, but like, can you get even more out of Todd Gurley? And I guess, so I'll start this part of Between the Horns by asking you, do you think there's even more left for Todd
Absolutely.
Gurley?
If the game dictates it, so be it. Yeah. Now, I remember, God, September, October, we were using him too much.
Sure.
And now we're not using them enough. You can't win as a coach or a play caller. But this is when I go back to takeaways. Even on that takeaway, that drive, that gotta have it with the lead drive. If you don't get the takeaway, if Chris Long doesn't make that play, I bet he gets 5 or 6 carries on that drive.
I agree with you.
Yeah. So,
or at least 5 or 6 more touches.
So it's not like they're not calling his number. They are. His usage was about right. It's just the takeaway short-circuited everything.
It does. It did. And I think when you look at just his usage in general, so Gurley has the second most touches in the league, 287. He's got the second most yards from scrimmage, 1637. Third most rushing yards, 1,035. He's only 10 from Kareem Hunt, who's second in the league. And you've also got somebody who, I don't know, he's become a dynamic pass receiver as well. And you see him getting all these touches in these games. You know, he's got 10 games with over 100 yards from scrimmage.
Right.
And so it's sort of, and the Rams are scoring, you know, over 30 points a game. So it's almost hard to complain about the way the play calling is.
Doesn't seem like it's so hard. Well, I hear a lot of complaining.
Right. But when...
I'm just kidding.
No, but I think it's interesting because when Todd Gurley has 13 rushes for 96 yards, and part of this, McVay has said, part of that is because the Rams only had 45 plays.
Yeah.
And I think you're absolutely right that part of it is also because the Rams had that giveaway in the fourth quarter. You still kind of look at it and you kind of go, wait a minute, there's something more that can be had here.
Well, it's I mean, what I've read and what I've heard is the magic number is, what is it, 20? 20 plus, you win?
Yeah.
Okay, well, it's not just turn around and hand it to them 20 times and you win the game magically.
Yes.
You have to set things up. Right. You're going for balance as an offense, because what balance does is it keeps the defense off balance.
Well, not only is it balance, but it's also, and McVay has addressed this, it's about being aggressive in ways that will help you move the football down the field.
Yeah.
So you're always going to try to take the best approach to moving the football down the field, whether that's running it or passing it, whatever you feel is best in that situation.
And remember, it's a chess game out there, because when you are balanced and you keep the defense off balance and then you start getting tells or they start getting fatigued, then you can start slamming the ball at them if they can't stop the run that day with Todd Gurley. Or if they're weak in pass coverage, you might call 6 straight passes in a row. But
we saw that against New Orleans.
Exactly. But what you want to do to at least get that going is attack with balance. I don't know what you're running, where you're running it. It could be a screen. It could be this. It could be that.
Yeah.
So I'm all over, you know what, trying to cover you. And then eventually, as the game wears on, I'll start to tell you what I'm in by my body language or fatigue, or I've seen all your plays. And then you start to attack weaknesses. That's how football is played.
Right. I think the perfect example of that I think we saw this year was Week 7 against the Arizona Cardinals, where the Rams were able to sort of get out to that lead. They got takeaways. They extended the lead. And then in the fourth quarter, you see them just start bludgeoning the Cardinals with the run. And then it finishes with that, I think, 18-yard pass, screen pass to Cooper Kupp for a touchdown that seals the game.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, look, if you watch and see what Jacksonville did, the minute they figured out Bobby Wagner wasn't Bobby Wagner today, they just kept running the ball.
Yeah.
Okay, go back to Arizona when the Rams were down there, when they figured out that Alec Ogletree was having difficulty in there. They just started running the football. Yeah. So the only way you're going to know is to remain balanced, stay on the field, and then start to figure out, oh, he can't cover today. Oh, they can't stop it over here. Then you start to, let's pick Todd up. Let's pick Cooper Kupp over here. Now we can just start playing man-on-man football. He can't cover Sammy Watkins. Yeah. How do we know that? Because we remain balanced, and we know this. Our information tells us we can make plays over here.
It's interesting, and when McVay says we didn't get the plays, it, part of that, you know, and he would even say this, I think, is, all right, it's not, it's kind of an excuse. It's a reason why things happen, but, you know, you don't extend drives with third down conversions. I think the Rams only had two throughout the entire game. So that's part of it, too. But if you only get 45 plays, you can't really do what you're talking about,
right,
which is get balanced, stay balanced,
and you're not,
and
that
figure out what the defense is doing to try to stop you from accomplishing your goals.
Yeah, you're a big play offense in the system. You're just not a drop back and flip the field because you have Randy Moss.
Yeah.
That's not who you are.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're going to need plays to move down the field.
Right.
And set things up for those
longer plays.
Right. And when takeaways happen, it robs you of that. And I'm glad you brought up the third down. Third down has been a little concerning as of late.
But it has been.
Season totals, you're okay. You're in the top 10, I believe, 40% third down conversions. But as of late, it's been a little concerning. To me, that goes back to protection and who you're playing.
And who's not on the field, too.
True.
Robert Woods has not been there, and I think that makes a difference.
Even if he is there, with some of the heat that's been getting to Jared Goff as of late. Now, remember, who you're playing.
The guys that are coming
after you. I mean, it's going up.
Fletcher Cox is a load.
On anybody.
Yeah.
Absolutely anybody. Yeah. And just look, if you can map out the third downs for the last three games, look at the defenses they've played and the guys that are coming after you. So that's been the difference. Robert Woods would help, but I think it's been more of a protection issue, pressure issue on Jared Goff. That's forced your third and longs to be third and hurry up to get it out. Yeah,
and that's going to be definitely something to monitor this week as the Rams play the Seahawks. Mm-hmm. I do want to sort of get to what McVay said about those Todd Gurley carries in our segment called Reading, where I read Sean McVay quotes. But he did say that, you know, McVay said on Monday that, you know, he started the second half wanting to get Todd Gurley going. And I think it was Rich Hammond from Southern California News Group that was like, he tweeted during the game, Sean McVay unlocked the Gurley feature at halftime.
Unlocked the Gurley feature. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because, I mean, you came out, you ran it with Todd Gurley, you had a screen to Todd, and then eventually you score a touchdown. And so McVay said, I'm basically generally about the run game. He said, anytime we're running the football like that, I've got to do a better job of making sure that Todd Gurley, gets enough touches to get into the flow, especially when we're getting some good movement. But it is a delicate balance, and then I think everything is a little bit more magnified, and he's talking about because you didn't get more than 45 plays. So at the end of the day, however you want to cut it, I've got to get him going, give him more opportunities with the way he was running it, and have a better feel for the flow of the game. That was something that I didn't think I did very well yesterday. So that's part of what he said, and then he kept talking, you know, there were more questions about it, and he said, you can't keep standing up here and saying the same things. You've just got to get it fixed. That's something I have to be mindful of. And so this is the thing that we've continually heard from Sean McVay the entire season, right? Like, he's putting the blame on himself and everything. But I think that was sort of the most emphatic he's been in the last couple of weeks about Todd Gurley, the touches, and that entire issue of the run game and keeping it established.
Welcome to December. Welcome to everything you do is going to be questioned.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, this is a learning experience for him, too.
It is.
First time head coach, first time in December, first time with 9 wins, when you have to answer monotonous questions. I'll say, see Bill Belichick. Really?
I hope John McVay.
No.
I'm just saying.
See Bill Belichick. I mean, he had to answer questions about a loss to Miami.
Yeah.
You see the way he responded. Yeah. It's no fun. Everything's magnified. Everybody's looking for a story. It is what it is. This is December football. So the one thing is you can't let it affect you, your play calling, or your team. Just answer and move on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone knows.
And I don't think it will.
Right. What do you mean?
I don't think it will affect the way he is calling players or whatnot.
I hope not.
Because as he was saying, like, we're always going to try to be aggressive, and we're always going to try to be the best that we can be in terms of figuring out the way that we can move the ball down the field in the most efficient way possible. And so, like, in that game against the Eagles, the Rams, just before 2 minutes left in the second quarter, had a run-pass balance, I think, of 17 pass plays to 6 runs, mm-hmm. which is a little bit off considering how, like, Todd Gurley, I think,
the
finished
score?
The first.
Right.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you were coming back right. from, you know, being down 21-7. So that's definitely part of it.
Right.
But, again, I just think it's interesting that, you know, we're talking about a team that's scoring 30.5 points per game that put up 35 points.
Yeah.
And it's still this talking point of, wait, there's seems like there's more out there, you know?
Well, you've been to football parties before, right? Thanksgiving, what have you, you know.
Yeah, and I don't really like going to football parties anymore.
Well, sitting around with people that like to second-guess coaching, I love this, right? They only call it out when they say that's not the play they would have run.
Okay, yeah.
If the
right.
play they're thinking in their head that the Rams should do this right now and they run that exact play and it gets stuffed, you never hear from that guy. You know what I mean? You never hear from that
right,
guy.
Right.
Only when it's success or like ultimate failure.
Yeah.
They should have did this or that's the play I would have called. Yeah. So, hey, look, it's the flow of the football game. Every game, every snap is its own little world, own little universe.
You sound like Greg Williams.
I'm being dead serious.
I know you're
it's
right.
one snap
you're
and right. clear. I mean, it's a short, really it's like 6 seconds long. But it seems like it's an eternity. It does. And whatever happens on that play determines what happens next. So either
right.
play calling or how you play it.
You're
so
right.
you have to stay within the flow of the game.
You do.
Yeah.
And I think that's one thing.
It's easy to extrapolate numbers at the end and say, aha.
Yes.
Yeah.
Of course. And that's one thing that, you know, nobody ever is in that pressure situation where you're on the headset, you're calling plays.
Right.
Like, it's much, much easier for me in the press box
yeah.
sitting there typing on my laptop to be like, why are they not running Todd Gurley?
Well, and don't get me wrong. I'm not going after anybody, but the head coach and the players know something that no one else knows, the condition of his own guys.
Yes,
yeah,
that's
I want to do this. Well, we can't do that right now, coach.
Right.
Okay, well, we'll have to call this until we're ready.
Well, see, but that's something that McVay said he also has to do better,
right.
talking about the strip sack that Chris Long had mm-hmm. and Rodney McLeod recovered, and which, sidebar, it was kind of funny. I asked Todd Gurley about that after the game, and he was like, yeah, I don't really remember what happened on that play, but it was kind of like a Rams family reunion out there because you had Chris
Long, the McLeod.
Rodney
yeah.
McLeod, and Nick Foles,
yeah, yeah.
quarterback, on the other side, so
yeah.
that was sort of interesting. But McVay even said, you know, I have to be more situationally aware as a play caller
yeah.
when calling play action deep ball with a right tackle that had been playing left tackle earlier in the game, and it's a second play in there, you know, coming in for an injured guy.
God, he's so smart. It is, because that's, I mean, he's telling you, he's giving you the exact right answer, but it's actually a coaching point. Like, who should really know that?
What do you mean?
Everything McVay just said, who should really know that? Be aware of that.
The players?
The quarterback.
Oh.
Yeah. It's deep ball. I got a backup right tackle.
Get rid of the ball.
There's a former second pick in the draft over there at left end. We're dropping back to 7. You might want to start climbing the pocket.
Mm.
Just saying.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, that's the coaching point.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, you can take it on yourself if you want. But the guy who's out there in the helmet should know the same things you know.
Okay.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Okay. No, yeah. I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And that's one, I mean, it's probably one reason why Jared Goff said in his post-game press conference, he was told that McVay said the situationally mm-hmm. aware thing, and Jared goes, yeah, he told me the same thing, but he really shouldn't do that. You know, once the play comes in, it's my responsibility to make sure that we execute it.
And, oh, yeah.
And that's what he is as the quarterback.
Oh,
is what
God.
He was
oh, man. Miles, I can remember, like, being coached to, like, try to anchor down on a double team.
Okay.
You know what anchor down on the double team means?
It means that you're just basically hunkering down and you're trying to keep those guys in the same spot from blowing by you.
Take it on, drop my hip to the ground, yeah. and not give ground
right.
on a double team.
Yeah.
That's what I've been coached to do. What's in front of me is an 800-pound double team.
Oh, God.
There's no way in the world I can do what you want me to do in this situation. Now, it's up to me as a football player to get the job done.
Figure out a way to do it.
Figure out a way to get it done.
Yeah.
Or just know what's in front of you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it can't be all the coach has to tell you everything about situational football. At some point, it's on you as the player.
Well, I think that's like life, right?
Yeah.
At
yeah.
some point, you've got to be able to take on things yourself.
Yeah.
And know what things are and just have some common sense and
yeah.
say, like, bleep it, I'm going to figure it out.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, look, Carson Wentz, Russell Wilson, two of the best at finding ways to stay alive in the pocket.
Yeah.
Right? That situational awareness of who's rushing versus who's blocking and what play do we have on and
right.
what might happen in this situation.
Mm-hmm.
That's all stuff that needs to go on the field,
mm-hmm.
not just from one guy on the sideline.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One more thing about Todd Gurley, the hurdle that he had in that game, I thought was one of his best hurdles. Maybe only second to the one he had against Washington earlier this year, where he hurdled the guy, then like got into the end zone somehow. Which that play was pretty incredible.
Well,
but the hurdle he had in this game, which I think came like two plays before that strip sack, like he clean hurdles the guy and keeps running. It was like Jenkins was nothing. It was that to me just shows so much about his athleticism.
Yeah, I mean, of the backs that I've seen, and maybe some guys in the AFC that we don't talk about every single day, but the two most exciting running backs I've seen this year up close, Todd Gurley and Alvin Kamara.
I knew you were going to say Kamara.
Just the stuff they're doing physically is unbelievable.
It is.
So if I'm on their team, either the Saints or the Rams, the last thing I want to do as a receiver, a tackle, a quarterback, anybody, is make a mistake so that I'm taking this guy off the field.
Mm.
This guy is a home run a second.
Yeah.
And he's an eyelash away on almost every single play.
Yeah.
All you're trying to do is set him up for another run. So when he's playing like that, stay on the field. Eventually, he's going to get you in the box.
Exactly. And that's something that I think we've just seen all year. It's nice to see the Rams run their offense through Todd Gurley. Again, mentioned this a little bit earlier, but he has reached 1,000 yards rushing now for the second time in his career. And I think that is still a pretty good, that's a really good accomplishment for any running back, especially in today's NFL, which can be kind of pass happy.
True. I mean, look, 1,000 yards isn't what it used to be, but it's still effective.
Yeah.
When you have one guy rush the football for 1,000 yards, I would say your offense is doing pretty well.
Yeah,
even
probably.
If you stink. Even if you're a bad offense with
you're a 7-9 team.
With a losing record, if you have a 1,000-yard back, you're at least competitive every single Sunday.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, this back is competitive.
More than that.
That is 9-4. So let's kind of reset for a second. Talk about a couple of injuries. True Johnson is not in the concussion protocol as was announced, which is definitely good news. So that is probably really positive for him to potentially play on Sunday, and he would most likely be covering Doug Baldwin most of the game. I mean, that's their number one guy. But he had a stinger that he suffered on that hit. I think it was to Trey Burton on that big third down that Nick Foles made as good of a pass as I think he's made.
Can I amend? He'll be covering Baldwin if he's outside the numbers.
Okay.
If he's in the slot, it's going to be somebody else.
It's probably going to be Robbie Coleman.
Yeah, I would bet.
Done a really good job.
Right.
Whitworth, Havenstein, they have knee injuries, but they're expected to play, according to McVay. The Rams practice schedule for today, Wednesday, is actually not a practice anymore. They did this kind of last week because of the fires and the fires that were going on in Ventura County. The air quality wasn't as good, so they practiced inside at Kowloon. But instead, they kind of like that schedule.
Mm-hmm.
So especially, you know, you're getting late in the year. Guys have, as you like to call them, ouchies or boo-boos. So they're letting those guys kind of heal up a little bit. And so that's going to be good to, I don't know, you're going to play a physical game against Seattle.
Yeah.
You know.
You write every day for a living, right?
I do.
Can you imagine taking a typing class every day at 8:30 in the morning?
No. That sounds horrible.
December football.
Yeah.
You know, for some guys, okay, it's like typing class for you. Yeah, I know this stuff already. I know
like
what they're
like an Andrew Whitworth.
Yeah.
Right? Like, yeah.
What
I gotcha.
You need right now is to get off your feet and just go recover.
Yeah.
Yeah. The mental stuff you've already got. You haven't made a mistake in 6 weeks. You're fine.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not putting anything new for you.
Mm-hmm.
You're good.
Yeah.
Rest. So
yeah.
I love these sort of days for good football teams.
Yeah. And the other thing that I think is going to be really key this week is that both Robert Woods and Connor Bowen are expected to play.
Mm-hmm.
So Robert Woods obviously was the Rams' most productive receiver before he went down at the end of that Minnesota game. And I think having him back, particularly for this game, and especially with Seattle's secondary the way it is right now, that's going to be huge for Jared Goff.
It's going to stretch you thin defensively because now the other wild card is active and he's up. So with two good receivers, you probably have two good corners. Every team does. Well, now let's add that third. And not only do you have to have a third corner, but you have to have a great one because the other two are still moving around and they're still having they've had good games without Robert Woods. So it just expands the offense a little bit more. And I would bet that probably because of him and the threat of him, your screen game gets off again.
Hmm.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to start to run guys off. It's no longer, well, I can just kind of keep one eye in the backfield and one guy on my man. With Robert Woods, you better be focused on him, which means he's going to run you right out of there.
Exactly.
Which is good. That could open up screens.
That 94-yard touchdown against the Texans is going to continue to pay dividends with Robert Woods because it just shows off his speed. Also, that 52-yard touchdown that he had on 3rd and 33 against the Giants.
Oh, no doubt. And he's going to make you pay for pressure, too, because when it's man coverage, he's smart enough to know where I'm hot or who's got me versus the blitz, and now it's just one-on-one all over the field.
Right.
And look, even in his Buffalo days, he was getting open.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's got a quarterback that can get him the rock, too. So, yeah, that just opens everything up for the Rams offense.
One of Robert Woods' best games of his career came against the Seattle Seahawks last year, and I think we even talked about this when the Rams first signed him, but he made 10 catches for 162 yards at Seattle last year with Buffalo, and that was when Tyrod Taylor was his quarterback.
And the Legion of Boom was the Legion of Boom.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think that just tells you, like, hey, Robert Woods can come out here and he can really do something.
He is not afraid of that environment.
No.
He welcomes it. He relishes it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I love it. When Seattle was at their best, their secondary was the best in football. I mean, they were absolutely intimidating. You would see guys fold up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just not want to play, except guys like him.
Right.
Yeah, he wants to be in that environment. So it's good to have him back going up there.
Yeah, another thing that I think we should acknowledge is Cooper Kupp, wide receiver. Mm-hmm. He's now set the franchise record for a rookie wide receiver, easy for me to say, with 56 receptions in a season. And that record had been standing since 1996. So good for him.
Who's tougher to get to talk about themselves, Cooper Kupp or Sean McVay?
Oh, God. I mean, like, nobody, we didn't have much time with Kupp in the locker room after the game, but I know, like, asking him about that, especially after a loss, would have just been, like, dude, like, come on.
Right, right. I love his demeanor.
Yeah.
It's a veteran demeanor.
It is.
So, look, he is a rookie. I'm glad there's a rookie record there, but, I mean, we said it from day one. This kid is no rookie.
Right.
Yeah,
and
he was pro ready day one. Yeah.
McVay has said that offensive coordinator Matt LaFleur has also said that, you know, he's got a veteran presence about him that special.
It's like taking one of those pitchers from Japan, bringing him over. The guy's like 35, but you call him a rookie here. You
know, like Ichiro Suzuki back in 2001, who won Rookie of the Year.
That's
over
no rookie.
CC Sabathia. I will never forget that in Major League Baseball. Ichiro Suzuki was no rookie. CC Sabathia should have won that award.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know it was that deep.
Oh, it was.
But you know what I mean.
That deep.
Right. Right.
I'm still an Indians fan.
But he is a rookie, but he has been pro ready. I mean, look, he's been ready for this environment since birth.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is no shock to him.
I'm looking forward to seeing him go to Seattle and see how he's going to play. It's basically his hometown. He's from Yakima, Washington.
Yakima.
Which is not very far out.
How did you say it?
Yakima. What did I say?
I've never heard anybody pronounce it like that. Even people from Yakima.
What did I say?
I don't know. It just sounded weird. Say it again.
Yakima.
Okay. Okay. Never mind. Anyway.
Is that not how I said it before?
I don't remember, to be honest.
Anyway,
hey, guess what? It took me 45 minutes to get on the show
to say a word.
Hey! I was waiting for an opportunity to get you in there.
I didn't want to cut in.
Oh.
No.
Anyway.
It's funny. I know that what Yakima is because in college, one of my best friend's roommates was from Yakima.
Oh, no
kidding.
And then
there was also another guy that when I was on the paper, he was sports editor, I think, two terms after me.
Yeah.
He also was from Yakima, Wisconsin, Washington.
Cool. I mean, look.
I know you know where it is because you went to school up there.
There's going to be weather up in Seattle.
Yes.
This time of year.
Yes.
So it's not going to affect him. He's used to it.
Yeah.
That's home for him.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, I heard Coach McVay talk about Jared Goff and throwing the wet football. It doesn't bother Jared at all.
Yeah.
He loves it. Well, he's got a receiver that feels the same way.
Mm.
This environment, which you may call rough, I call perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's going to be fun this weekend. This has been an interesting episode. we'll go full disclosure before we talk a little more about the Seahawks.
What are you going to out us about?
No, I'm not outing you about anything.
What are you talking about?
I'm hopped up on caffeine.
Oh, okay.
Like, because I slept for like 3 hours last night. So
they don't want to hear that.
I don't care.
No one cares.
I know they don't really care, but I want to tell the story because it's my rant of the week. So you can sit there and be huffy if you want.
Okay, go ahead.
So last night, I'm home. Like, I had some popcorn that my aunt sent me. Shout out to my aunt for sending me some Topsies popcorn. If you've never heard of Topsies, Matt can tell you, this is some of the best stuff on earth, right,
It's
Matt?
The best, and you got to get it every single year. You have to.
Every single year.
Don't encourage
My uncle, for, like, the last 15 years, has sent me one on Christmas Day every single year.
Yeah, it's a nice canister of popcorn. Nice. It's got your cheese, it's got your caramel, it's got your, you call it cinnamon candy, what's the red?
Cinnamon,
yeah. Great stuff, I can assure you. Anyway, so after eating that, I'm like lying in bed, I'm asleep. All of a sudden, at 1:30 in the morning, there's a car horn, and it goes off, right? Car alarm, beep, 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 beep. And I'm like, okay, it wakes me up because I've got my window open. It's a nice night. It's like 50-some degrees. Of course you got your window open. And I'm thinking, okay, like I can, I'm like half awake, but I can get back to sleep. So it goes off and I was like, okay. And then it goes off again. And then it goes, and then it stops and it goes off again. This happens like 10 times within a 10-minute period. I'm awake. And now I can't fall back asleep. It was awful. So I couldn't get back to sleep until like 6 in the morning. It was terrible. So now I don't like.
This is when I go Belichick. No, give me a break. Any questions about the game?
Listen, I'm just saying. What was funny about it was that you could hear somebody like yelling out of their window, like,
yeah.
Drop the alarm! Drop it! Which I could have easily done. It could have easily been me, but I really didn't want to get up out of my bed because, like, I don't know. And then I had already taken a melatonin, so you can't really take another one because who knows what that's going to do to your body. So, yeah. You know what the French call it?
This feels like a reality show confessional right now.
Maybe it is. I don't know.
Yes.
The French call that a nuit blanche, a white night. And so that's always what I think of whenever I have a night where I just cannot sleep. It was a white night for me. So hopefully this episode of Between the Horns has actually been good because I don't know because I'm totally almost out of it today.
Football!
Anyway, the Rams take on the Seahawks this weekend. It's a huge game. Maybe the biggest Rams game in over a decade. But when you've got these games that are late in the year, you're coming up on clinching. This is something I particularly want to ask you.
As I'm watching him take a swig of coffee. As I'm watching him take a big swig.
I just want to feel like that, man. I want to be like that.
Are you sure it's coffee? Yeah. Just saying. Anyway,
feel
finish
like
your point.
What are you two talking about?
Nothing. Anyway, what was your point?
I just want to be giddy as Miles. I need a white knight.
No, these aren't good. I'm going to be dead by like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It's going to be
just
awful.
In time
maybe
for practice.
Sooner if we don't talk football.
When you're thinking about 1999 in situations where you're getting close to clinching,
yes.
What was the mentality of the team and how did you get to, how did you get there where you could mentally be prepared to say, all right, we know this is a big game, let's go execute?
Well, it's crazy because the distractions ramp up around this time of year, especially when you're good. There's more attention on you, there's more people asking questions, there's more criticism on you. I mean, stuff that really doesn't filter down into the locker room. That when you do see it, you go, wow, really? That's what they think? And you're a week past that already. So it is what it is. But Coach Vermeil did a great job keeping us focused on our goals. But I do remember one thing he did was he brought a flashlight in. And this is key for players. Break it all the way down. He brought a flashlight in, and he shined it against the wall. Mm-hmm. And he said, look, if I hold this all the way back, I can get the entire wall. The flashlight will show the entire wall. But as he got closer, so did the focus. Hmm. And it became just a dot right next to the wall. He said, that needs to be our focus. And we got it.
Yeah.
It made sense. Forget everything else. Don't pull back. Stay close to what you have to do and stay focused on the job at hand, which is one game, one play at a time.
Right.
When you start getting into this game means a lot, this game is playoffs, yada, 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 then you put the cart before the horse and you're doomed to fail. So stay focused. It's all just about Seattle right now. Forget what the game means. It's just about defeating your man, going after them, and getting the win up in Seattle. And then the rest will take care of itself.
I think the Rams have done a really good job of keeping that attitude all year long. I mean, thinking about the Jacksonville game and then the Arizona game that you played, that they played right after it. You know, you had a lot of chances to be distracted on that trip. And the Rams went out and they shut out the Arizona Cardinals.
Right.
And that was after those were the two games after Seattle defeated you at home.
Mm-hmm.
So those two games could have brought up a lot of different things, especially, I mean, Jacksonville, you almost might look past that and say, wow, you know, we've got this really long road trip. We're staying at this nice resort.
Mm-hmm.
And the Rams didn't do that at all.
Yeah.
And I think it's just the attitude that they have shown has been all season, one game, one play at a time.
I remember being in Carolina in 1999, and I might be the only guy on my team that this happened to, but I doubt it. When we finally started to win the game and we – you know, you have that feeling on the bench that this game is ours. We have more points. They have less time. We're going to win this football game. And then somebody started handing out hats. I'm like, what are they doing? And it said NFC West champions on it. And I had no idea. Zero idea. No idea that if we won and something else happened, we'd become champions that day. It wasn't talked about. It was just talked about beating the Carolina Panthers.
Yeah.
That was a cool moment. Like, why are they passing out hats? Oh, my God, we're champs.
Huh.
That's how your mentality should and needs to be at this point. If you're the Patriots, it's a little bit different. You've been through this before. But this group, this Rams group right now, probably has that same mindset. I don't know what's going on out in the world. All I know is I got to get Russell Wilson. All I know is right now I've got to get Doug Baldwin on the ground. And then they start passing out hats and you're happy.
Yeah.
That's the way it should be.
Yeah. So the Rams do not technically have a just winning or in clinching scenario this weekend. Should they win, though, against the Seahawks, that actually would be the case because you'd be two games up in the NFC West with just two games to go. So we now can talk about clinching scenarios, which I think is kind of cool.
Absolutely.
You know, like you're at a point where you don't just have to Jim Mora playoffs.
No, no.
Like, no, we can really talk about playoffs.
When you start talking about this and going into these environments and tuning everything out, you know that commercial we used to have where the guy would walk in with headphones on? And they'd play that song, You Can Tell Everybody.
Oh, yeah.
But that's back when we used to like Kaepernick. Right. Now we can't talk about that anymore.
Now we can't talk about that
anymore.
Right,
right. But that is the mentality. Walk through all the nonsense. The only thing that matters is this game and your opponent, and that's it. Everything else is just noise.
So we can talk about the fact that if the Rams win, and then if Atlanta and New Orleans loses, and then also if Green Bay and Detroit lose or tie, the Rams will clinch a playoff berth.
Wow.
Yes. So it's a complicated scenario, and it's not like it's just one thing that needs to happen for that to be the case. But it's something that is really tangible now. If these, you know, if these five things happen, the Rams will be in the playoffs in 2017.
That is awesome. Yeah. I mean, that's really cool to think about and pursue. And let's just hope the team plays their best game on Sunday.
You're going to need it.
And then everything else probably takes care of itself.
Yeah, as McVay says, you have to be at your best when your best is required. But winning
no white knights for football.
No,
there are no white knights for football players or coaches.
Winning in Seattle before we do get out of here. Winning in Seattle is very difficult. And but the Rams have done it as recently as 2015, which was a cool game because you then were 7-8, had the opportunity to go 8-8, which I think we talked about a couple of weeks ago. That would have been big then.
Right.
And reaching 500 this year was like, okay, but you still have X amount of games to go. And But, you know, when you had that game, Gurley had a solid game, 83 yards rushing. He had a touchdown, had that hurdle, and then he fumbled. And then center Tim Barnes was like Johnny on the spot.
Oh, my God, what a recovery. Yeah, I do remember that. Yeah.
So he actually had a couple in that game. But again, the Rams, I believe, can win this game in Seattle no matter how tough it is. Like, you think about actually, teams have gone into Seattle and played well this year. Didn't see it from the Eagles, but Atlanta played well up there and won. Washington played well up there and won. The Texans played well up there and conceivably should have won.
Could have won.
With Deshaun Watson as their quarterback still before that injury. So, again, this is a game that the Rams can win, and they should not be afraid to go up into that environment.
No. I think some of the mystique has been knocked out of Seattle. And it's inevitable. I mean, they've had a great run, and they've done it in a physical way. Mm-hmm. So eventually that's going to take a toll on their bodies, their defense, and the way they want to win football games. But I'll tell you, the last people that know that are them and that fan base up there. They still think it's 5 years ago.
Yeah.
They're still crazy. They're still loud. It's insanely loud out there. Even the guys that aren't the Pro Bowlers, the fill-ins for Richard Sherman, the fill-ins for Cam Chancellor. These guys still act like they're the Legion of Boom.
Yeah.
There are some plays you can make against them. It's not the same place to play as it was a couple years ago, but they don't know it. They're still playing like it. So you still have to go up there and knock them off. They're not going to give it to you in Seattle.
Absolutely not. I really think this should be a fun one. I love going up to Seattle. It's one of my favorite road trips every year when we do it.
Ditto. Just get some sleep.
Yeah. I'm going to try to get some sleep.
Take some melatonin.
Well, not too much melatonin, right? I don't know. I don't really know what the recommended dosage is.
Have some spiked eggnog.
Maybe I'll do that.
There you go. Yeah.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of Between the Horns. Kickoff on Sunday is at 1:05. Game is on Fox. Of course, you can, as always, you can tune in to DeMarco Farr, J.B. Long, and Maurice Jones-Drew on the call on ESPN LA. For producer Matt, for DeMarco Farr, I'm Miles Simmons.
He's a white knight.
I am a white knight in a dark, dark world.